All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. Today is January 9th, 2026, and it's Jobs Day. Happy Jobs Day. Oh, my God. The jobs report, it was so good. It was amazing. The economy is surging. 50,000 jobs added. Unemployment has fallen. It's the best economy ever. Everybody stop reading. Stop paying attention. That's all you need right there, right? We just need the headline number. We just need the unemployment rate going down. I'm going to go on Fox News and pound my chest. It's the best economy ever. It's not. This jobs report was dreadful. Oh, my God. I mean, look, there was some good in it. The headline numbers look great. The unemployment rate fell. But there's also a lot of stuff that just doesn't make any freaking sense. It makes me doubt the credibility of the people reporting the numbers. And the elephant in the room, the thing that everybody should just like go to every time a jobs report comes out. First look every time should be downward revisions to prior months. And whoa, boy, when you go look at those prior revisions to downward months, keep in mind, we're starting from a point of we gained 50,000 jobs. November's jobs report was revised lower from 64,000 down to 56,000 jobs added. All right, that's off by 8,000. So right away, we lost 8,000 jobs from downward revisions to November. Remember, they were all bragging in the news about how great it was that we added 64,000 jobs in November, overlooking that on the same day they reported a big negative number for October, and it was actually jobs lost net over those 2 months. But let's like forget about that. Forget all about that, right? Oh, but we haven't talked about the downward revisions to October yet. And that's the big number. That's the one everybody should be paying attention to. October was revised from a loss of 105,000 jobs initially reported last month to a loss of 173,000 jobs in October, a downward revision of 68,000. Combine those two downward revisions. We have got 76,000 net downward revisions. Subtract that from the 50,000 jobs gained. Oh, crap. We actually lost 26,000 jobs on net for the month of December. Oh, but remember, guys, it's the best economy ever, and our plans are working and everything. And wow. Now, yet somehow during that same time frame, as we have seen these big downward revisions, net losses in the tens of thousands, somehow the unemployment rate went down during that time. The U3 unemployment rate was reported at 4.4%. Now, that's down from what was reported last month of 4.6%. They downwardly revised the unemployment rate from last month. They went from 4.6 to 4.5. Now, guys, there's so much I don't understand here, and I just don't get it. How did we downwardly revise the unemployment rate from last month when we were 4.6 and now we're 4.5? How did we do that if we also downwardly revised those prior 2 months' jobs by 76,000? A 0.1% decline in unemployment rate means about 160,000 people more were working if you lowered the unemployment rate by 0.1%. But we don't have 160,000 more people working. We have 76,000 fewer people working. How does that happen at the same time? And then somehow, even though we only added 50,000 jobs, somehow we're going to take another tenth of a point off of unemployment and lower it to 4.4 for the month of December. So even though the cumulative addition of non-farm payrolls was a loss of 26,000 jobs during this time frame, the actual change in unemployment we're reporting suggests a gain of almost 320,000 jobs. These numbers don't jive. Somebody's full of shit. But everybody's going to go on TV and talk about jobs added and how good it was. I hope not. I hope people are actually scrutinizing this data. We're also going to talk about full-time, part-time, multiple job holders, self-employed, unincorporated, the gig workers. Big changes in those numbers. That also leaves me with more questions than answers. We're going to talk about the sectors that are being added, the jobs where let's just talk about it. Food service and drinking places. So we're all going out and getting drunk. Healthcare, we're getting sick or dying as a result of it. And social assistance, our families are falling apart at the same time. All sectors that indicate a real thriving prosperous civilization, don't they? Bars, hospitals, and social workers. That's the people that are getting hired right now. Oh, dear. You just got to love the economy. All right. Meanwhile, let's talk about what else is going on in the world, shall we? Trump has told Fannie and Freddie to buy $200 billion of mortgage-backed securities. In a True Social post last night, he started reporting about, oh, yeah, we've done so well buying all these mortgage-backed securities. And so in an effort to make homes more affordable, I'm going to order my representatives at Fannie and Freddie to buy $200 billion more mortgage-backed securities in order to bring down interest rates and make homes more affordable. He knows that's not how this works. He is not stupid. He's a real estate investor. He knows lowering mortgage rates artificially by buying MBS does not make homes more affordable. It actually does the opposite. It makes them more expensive. And let's also talk about the fact that the Federal Reserve is currently unwinding their holdings of mortgage-backed securities. And they're taking the proceeds of those mortgage-backed securities and they're buying treasury bills with them. So they're pulling liquidity out of mortgage-backed securities and putting it into the treasury market. Meanwhile, Fannie and Freddie are going to be borrowing money through the government, pulling liquidity out of the bond market and putting it into mortgage-backed securities, thus negating what the Federal Reserve is doing. President Trump, you've been spending too much time with Sam Altman and Jensen Huang. Now we've got circular accounting deals going on with the Federal Reserve and the Treasury and Fannie and Freddie. How about crazy idea here? How about all of you stop messing with price discovery and we just let the market figure out where it wants to go without your filthy freaking fingers on the scale? And as my friend Melody Wright pointed out very accurately yesterday, they've been doing this all along. This isn't really a change. He's just drawing attention to what they're doing, and he's going to take them all the way up to the cap that he's allowed to buy them, the amount that he's allowed to buy them. So, yeah, it's not necessarily money printing. It's more money borrowing, but since it is going to stress liquidity in the bond market, it moves up the timetable on the big print that we all see coming. Also, today, Trump is expected to meet with the oil majors to talk about investments in Venezuela. A number of $100 billion in investments is being thrown around. And President Trump mentioned, hey, the new administration that we pretty much installed, they're playing nice in the sandbox, so we're going to cancel our previously scheduled second attack on the country. So, okay, that's good, I guess. Fewer bombs flying. We've got a big Meta nuclear deal was just announced. Meta is going to be buying all of the power output from Perry, Davis-Besse, and Beaver Valley nuclear plants. That's three entire power plants that are going to be coming not off the grid, but all the power they produce is going to go to big tech instead of your house. So your electric bills are going to go up again. Oh, that's just great. They're also cutting deals with Oklo and TerraPower to hopefully soon build some small modular reactors that are still not allowed to be built because of the regulatory environment in this country. But as it happens, we've got a new commissioner at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, a new chairman. Mr. Ho Nie was just appointed the new chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. He's got a somewhat impressive background, but there's some things in there that kind of caught my attention. We'll talk about that guy. We've got unbelievable cash burn at XAI, $8 billion in the last few months of last year. They are burning through capital like crazy in the AI space. It is the just biggest incineration of money in history, and it's going to come back to haunt them. We've got India is burning through their dollar reserves in order to prop up the rupee. It's not working. And last but not least, General Motors is taking a $6 billion charge related to their investments in electric vehicles that, in a shocking turn of events, ended up being not very good investments, kind of like exactly what I said back in 2021 and 2022 when they were doing this, but I digress. This follows last week. We had the announcement from Ford, who was taking $19.5 billion in losses. It's almost like all these silly Kathy Wood stories on CNBC from years ago went exactly how I said they were going to go. See also the AI bubble. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Hey, don't forget that like button. You new guys, hit that subscribe button right next to it so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every day. And right now, the S&P 500 is positive Although we've got some pretty wonky trading going on right now. Here's the non-farm payrolls report. It comes out. Stocks shoot up. Everybody's like, oh, my God, it's the best economy ever. And then they look and realize, oh, well, actually, this means the Fed might actually cut even more, because when you read the fine print, the jobs report actually sucks. But now we see it coming back down. So it's kind of interesting. This is why I never trade around these big data releases. The algorithms start arm wrestling. But for now, we're up about 0.2%. The Dow is higher by 89 points, now 91 points, or 0.19% to the upside. Again, ripping on that jobs report and then selling off a little bit afterward. And the NASDAQ is up 81 points, or 0.32%, same shape to that chart. Looking over at the DXY, the dollar is higher again this morning by 21 basis points, 99.08. We have seen the dollar strengthen quite a bit since Christmas Eve here, more than 100 basis points higher, and it's getting a little bit stronger as we speak. Also interesting, the dollar very volatile following that non-farm payrolls. It looked like it wanted to head lower, but now it's reversed. And looking over at the bond market, we've got a little bit of a mixed bag going on here in Treasuries trading. The 30-year yield is at 4.843%. That is lower by about 1.5 points. The 10-year yield of 4.176% is off by about 1 point. The 2-year, meanwhile, is higher at 3.501. That's up by a point and change. And the 1-month treasury is at 3.612%. That is lower by about 0.5 point. Not a lot happening in bonds this morning. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got a lot of green. Although it's a tame move relative to some of the moves we've seen in metals recently. Spot gold is at $44.87, up 10 bucks here, or 0.22%, threatening to recapture that 4,500 level. February COMEX gold futures are right at that level, $44.97, higher by 36 bucks, or 0.81%. We were previously above 4,500 earlier this morning. My favorite of the shiny, spot silver, is at $78.62, up $1.63 this morning, 2.1% higher. March COMEX futures are at $78.53. That's higher by $3.40, or 4.5% higher. Guys, you'll notice here the arbitrage between the two. We're still in backwardation, but only by about 15 cents now. We were in backwardation by about 50 cents earlier this week. Not really sure if I should draw any conclusions from that or not. Perhaps the supply stress in London is easing somewhat, although we're still in backwardation, so we're not in the all clear. Either way, I like the shiny. Copper is up by 1.5%. Platinum is higher by 1%. Big move in palladium this morning, 5.7% higher. And crude oil is also higher this morning, 1.64%, $58.72 for February WTI futures. Again, the oil markets just don't seem to care about what's happening in Venezuela. That has baffled me all week. It continues to baffle me this morning. Looking at Bitcoin right now, $90,285. That's off by another 700 bucks, give or take, from yesterday. We are now red 4 days in a row for Bitcoin. Looks like we ran into some resistance, the same level that we ran into a couple of weeks ago. This seems to be holding here. And again, I expect Bitcoin to continue lower. All right, let's talk about some of the statistics that we just got. Here's the non-farm payrolls report. This is on Trading Economics. The United States payrolls increased by 50,000. There's that 50,000 number. We've also showing 56,000, the downwardly revised number from November. It was previously 68,000. And of course, I'm sorry, no, it was previously 64,000. And of course, the October number still showing as the original. Let's refresh that and see if it reports. There we go. Now it's showing negative 173,000. Took Trading Economics a minute to put those downward revisions in there. The unemployment rate, this is the U3 unemployment rate, the headline number, 4.4%. That is down from 4.5% in November, which was initially reported as 4.6%. And that's what's really got me scratching my head this morning. And I really shouldn't scratch my head that much because my hair's already falling out. This is not going to help matters one bit. I don't understand how unemployment rate drops by 0.2% with a negative net addition of payrolls, unless hundreds of thousands of people just like suddenly died and the working population dropped. I just don't understand how that happens. U6 unemployment. We talked about this one last month. A big drop in U6 unemployment by 3 basis points. That's like, what, like 450,000 people almost. How does that happen with a net loss of jobs? I just don't get it. Just don't understand that. And labor force participation rate. This could possibly help explain some of that. We had a decline of labor force participation rate of 0.1%. So, all right, that's people coming out of the people we're counting in the working population. That could partially explain the drop in unemployment, but in my opinion, it's not enough. All right, let's talk. This is the actual Bureau of Labor Statistics report that just came out, the non-farm payrolls from the BLS website, both total non-farm payroll employment plus 50,000 and the unemployment rate 4.4% changed little in December, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported today. Employment continued to trend up in food services, drinking places, healthcare, and social assistance. Okay, the only good thing there is food services, right? Okay, restaurants are doing good. Other than that, we're sick, getting drunk, and the social workers waiting for us when we get home from the bar. So, yeah, that, you really paint a picture of prosperity there with the sectors that are adding jobs. The big thing that I'd found, though, and again, when you get these unemployment numbers, you really got to go right to those downward revisions, and that is the tell, because we love to report glossy, shiny numbers and then pay no attention to the fact that we downwardly revise them into oblivion in subsequent months. The change in total non-farm payroll employment for October was revised down by 68,000 from negative 105,000 to negative 173,000. October was a really bad month. It's got to be the government shutdown that was really driving that. But those jobs have not come back. That's the big thing, because these other downward revisions here changed to November, revised lower by 8,000 from 64,000 added to 56,000 added. And then, okay, well, you've got a net total net downward revision of 76,000 here. So again, net loss of jobs. When you take away those downward revisions from the 50,000 number you're reporting, you end up with 26,000 fewer people working than reported a month ago. This is not a good jobs report. Now, I always like to go to table A9 in this. You get the good data in this table, the select unemployment indicators or the select employment indicators. This breaks down the kind of jobs. Now, it's also important to note that the headline number that they report, the 50,000 jobs added and the downward revisions, that's all the establishment survey. That's calling up businesses saying, who'd you hire, who'd you fire? There's also the household survey, which calls up people and says, who in your house is working? What are they doing? What kind of job do they have? They're two totally different surveys. And as we found over the last few years on this channel, they often differ wildly. And today was no exception. All right. So keep in mind, we supposedly added 50,000 jobs. And apparently they were all full-time workers, because here's your seasonally adjusted number from October. We had 134.3 million people working full-time jobs in October. Now that number is reported as 135,200. So we have had a net gain of 890,000 full-time jobs reported for the month of December. I don't know how you get that. Where in the economy did almost a million people get full-time jobs in the last month? That defies logic, all right? Everything I have seen about the economy, the announced layoffs, everything just says this number doesn't seem right to me. It just doesn't pass the sniff test. And it also doesn't agree with the establishment survey talking to businesses, who did you hire? Now, as we progress down through some of these other statistics, okay, the numbers maybe start to make a little more sense. 29.4 million part-time workers reported in November. Now 28.7 part-time. So even though we added hundreds of thousands of full-time jobs, which is a good thing, brings benefits, brings paid time off, we lost 740,000 part-time jobs. So those are generally lower paying, less prosperous jobs. So that's not so terrible. But as we continue to read on, it keeps getting worse here. Multiple job holders. Okay, you could say this is worse or this is better. We went from 9.2 million, almost 9.3 million multiple job holders down to 8.8 million. So we lost 444,000 part-time job holders. You could look at this and say people don't have to work two part-time jobs anymore because they got a full-time job. So if you look at it that way, this is a positive. Or you could look at this and say people who need second jobs are now unable to find them. I don't really know which one is going on here. But if you add up the loss of multiple job holders and the loss of part-time jobs, and this loss of self-employed workers, well, again, it's not really a good thing. Self-employed, unincorporated, that's your gig work, your OnlyFans girls, part-time day laborers, 10,000 or 10.2 million down to 9.8 million. So a loss of 434,000 in that category. Again, when you look at this survey, guys, if the full-time work going up by 890,000, that's great. But big drops in part-time, big drops in multiple, big drops in self-unemployed or self-employed unincorporated, you add all this up, it looks like less people working. And how did we get those 50,000 jobs added? And then how did we get unemployment falling? There's really a lot that doesn't make sense in this jobs report here, guys. And I have to once again send a shout out to Lots Ganapathy from Unicus Research. Data throttling was one of the things that she called out in that interview I posted on Wednesday with her. And I cannot look at these numbers and make them make sense this morning. This jobs report stinks. It just stinks. And by stinks, I mean, yeah, the data isn't great, but it also doesn't smell right. Those drops in unemployment just don't sit right with me. All right, let's shift gears a little bit here to some of the other stories going on. Trump tells Fannie and Freddie to buy $200 billion of mortgage debt. Oh, the big print, guys. It is getting closer. U.S. President Donald Trump is directing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to purchase $200 billion in mortgage bonds, a move he cast as his latest effort to bring down housing costs ahead of the November midterm election. Trump announced the move on Thursday in a social media post saying this will drive mortgage rates down, monthly payments down, and make the cost of owning a home more affordable. No, it won't. Pumping liquidity into the mortgage bond market does not make homes more affordable. Do we have to bring up the Fed balance sheet and the holdings of mortgage-backed securities and look at what they've done over the last 15 years and then look at what the affordability of the average home has done over that same time horizon and realize that government messing with the mortgage bond market doesn't make homes more affordable? Do we have to do all that? Or maybe you can just take my word for it. It doesn't work. But there it is. They're doing it. I mean, God forbid we actually let home prices fall to make homes more affordable. Oh, no, we can't do that. We can't let the prices come down, not when we could just further arbitrarily rig the bond markets in order to pump more liquidity in. And every time we do that, it just drives the prices even higher and makes the homes less affordable. Now, if we let the prices fall, then our buddies might lose money. We can't let that happen. Trump announced the move on Thursday in a social. Okay, we talked about this. He added that his decision not to sell Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac during his first term allowed them to amass $200 billion in cash, and that he was making his announcement because of that. Let's see. If the Trump administration allows Fannie and Freddie to grow their retained portfolios, in other words, buy more MBS, there's no question it will have a downward pressure on mortgage rates, probably at least a quarter of a point, maybe more, said David Dworkin, president and CEO of the National Housing Conference. And again, guys, driving down mortgage rates, all it does is allow homebuyers to further bid up home prices. It ends up having the opposite effect. And as those home prices get bid up, things like property taxes go up and things like insurance rates go up. This just makes homes less affordable, not more. And again, I want to send a shout out to my friend Melody Wright, who was very quick to point out yesterday that Fannie and Freddie have been doing this all along. We had this one back in December that didn't get much airtime. Fannie, Freddie quietly add billions to mortgage bond portfolios. This was December 15th, more than 3 weeks ago, this story broke that Fannie and Freddie had been doing this. So this is pretty much a non-news event that Trump is doing this. But I would point out that they mentioned in this article, assets are climbing again, rising more than $50 billion in the 5 months through October. Even after the jump, the firms remain more than $200 billion below their cap, leaving ample room for further growth. The pickup has caught the attention of analysts, who say that with officials offering little explanation, Wall Street is left to speculate about what's driving the shift and how much the government-sponsored enterprises might add next year. Well, we got our answer, $200 billion. Trump is taking them right to that cap, which is around $400 billion total. So again, they've been doing this all along. They're just going to keep doing it. That's the story. And yeah, also have to look at like what's the net forces, right? I tend to look at these things like a physics equation, right? The movement of anything and say that's the price. The movement is the result of the net forces acting on it. And right now you've got the Fed pulling money out of the mortgage-backed securities market and putting it into the treasury market. And then you've got Fannie and Freddie borrowing money, taking money out of the treasury market and putting it back into the MBS market. So with these two institutions diametrically opposed, doing the opposite thing, what's the direction prices are going to move? I don't freaking know. You shouldn't have to be a damn physicist to figure out what mortgage rates are going to be doing. Just get out of this business of rigging markets. Let the freaking market decide what the supply and demand of money is. Stop printing. Stop rigging. It's impossible to figure out where things are going to go when they keep doing this. Just measure the thing. Get your fingers off the scale. Meanwhile, we've got Trump says U.S. oil pledged $100 billion for Venezuela ahead of a White House meeting. It looks like we're trying to get ExxonMobil, Conoco, Chevron, get them back into Venezuela to get that oil flowing. U.S. President Trump said Friday the world's biggest oil companies pledged to invest $100 billion to revive Venezuela's oil sector as he prepared for a meeting with top industry executives. U.S. forces seized President Nicolas Maduro in a sweeping military operation on January 3rd, with Trump making no secret that control of Venezuela's oil was at the heart of his actions. At least $100 billion will be invested by Big Oil, all of whom I will be meeting with today at the White House, Trump wrote in a social media platform ahead of the gathering, where he was expected to convince the oil heads to support his plan for Venezuela. By the way, you notice they never use the name Truth Social in any of these media articles. They always say on a social media platform or his social media platform. It's like the press got together and decided that using the name Truth Social is off limits and that they won't give the brand any recognition by acknowledging it and using its name. Now, look, I'm short DJT stock because they bought a fusion company and I think it's a snake oil deal. But it is kind of interesting. Nobody wants to use the phrase Truth Social when they talk about this. They'll always say on a social media platform. But I digress. The Trump administration has repeatedly said that it is running Venezuela, with Energy Secretary Chris Wright on Wednesday asserting that Washington will control the country's oil indefinitely. Venezuelan interim president Delcy Rodriguez, who was Maduro's deputy, has said that her government remains in charge, with the state-run oil firm saying only that it was in negotiations with the United States on oil sales. In his social media post, Trump said he canceled a second wave of strikes on Venezuela due to what he called cooperation from the country. Yeah, I guess that's good. We're not going to bomb them again. He noted Venezuela began releasing political prisoners this week and said the countries are working well together, especially as it pertains to rebuilding their oil and gas infrastructure. Yeah, the stuff about the political prisoners and the human rights violations. But that oil's flowing. The spice must flow. U.S. outlet NBC reported that the heads of ExxonMobil, Chevron, and ConocoPhillips are expected at the White House meeting. All right, so maybe the oil's going to start flowing here. Meanwhile, we've got a massive nuclear deal being signed by Meta. Hey, look, they're going to fix the world with artificial intelligence. It's going to be great. Trust me, bro. All you need to do is give me your retirement, all your power, and all your water. And trust me, bro, it's going to be great. And oh, by the way, we're going to take away your job. Wait, what? Yeah, that's what they're saying. Meta signs multi-gigawatt nuclear deal for AI data centers. Breaking just this morning, Meta agreed to a series of electricity deals for its data centers that will make it the biggest buyer of nuclear power among its hyperscale peers. The agreements could end up totaling more than 6 gigawatts, enough to power a city of about 5 million homes. The deal shows how big tech scrambled to lock in electricity supplies has yet to slow amid a fierce industry battle for dominance in artificial intelligence. Guys, your power bills are going up because of this. Make no mistake, if you are anywhere near Ohio, the Great Lakes region in the Midwest, or Western Pennsylvania, your power bills will go up because of what freaking Facebook is doing here. But the good news is they're perfectly willing to sell ads to scammers that are targeting your retirement portfolio. So, you know, you're getting a lot of benefits from that. Meta said Friday it will purchase electricity from 3 existing Vistra Corp plants, that's previously Entergy, and support several small reactors that Sam Altman-backed Oklo and Bill Gates-backed TerraPower are planning to build over the next decade. Those deals follow a separate June agreement to get energy from a Constellation nuclear site. Let's see. We got some details here. Under the agreement with Vistra, Meta will buy energy from the Davis-Besse and Perry reactors in Ohio, including more than 2.1 gigawatts of operating generation. It will also get an additional 433 megawatts of energy from improvements that are planned to boost output from those two plants and from its Beaver Valley facility in Pennsylvania. All right, so the extra 433 megawatts, I'm not sure how much is going to come from Beaver Valley here, but they're talking about improvements that are planned to boost output. Those are known as uprates. When nuclear plants are designed, there's a lot of conservatism built into them. They only operate at certain temperatures and certain turbine speeds. There are ways to get more electricity out of the same reactor without changing anything going on the nuclear side of the plant. It really just affects the steam flow through the condensers, and you can get more megawatts out of it. It is a very rigorous regulatory process. It takes years, and it costs a lot of money to do an uprate, but you can get more electricity out of an existing plant that way. So they're talking about uprates here at Davis, Bessie, and Perry as part of this deal as well. That's good. That's at least new generation, some new generation hitting the grid. So they're not just totally sucking all the power away from retail there. The Vistra nuclear plants will continue to supply the largest U.S. grid operated by PJM, which serves more than 67 million people from the Midwest to the Mid-Atlantic. That paragraph is total horse manure. They're like, oh, don't worry. They're still going to sell power into the grid, even though they just cut a deal to give all that power directly to freaking Facebook. No. Okay, it's still going to flow into the grid and then directly to Facebook and out of the grid. They're trying to make it look like they're not going to be taking power away from people's homes here. They absolutely will be. In a separate deal with Oklo, Meta will get up to 1.2 gigawatts of capacity from reactors that Oklo is planning to build in Ohio, with the first going into service as early as 2030. Oklo is developing a 75-megawatt reactor, though it still needs approval from federal regulators. The agreement with Meta also includes a prepayment primarily to help Oklo procure fuel. Meta has also agreed to support development of two reactors by TerraPower capable of generating up to 690 megawatts with delivery as early as 2032. Meta also secured the rights for energy from up to six other future reactor projects that together would total 2.1 gigawatts of power. Now, that Oklo deal and that TerraPower deal, those are both very speculative. Neither of those facilities is licensed by the NRC or has any kind of design certification or approval whatsoever from the NRC to build those reactors. And those reactors won't get built without a major change to the regulatory structure. But don't let that stop Oklo shareholders from bidding this thing up 13% on this deal. I don't think that's going to last very much, to be honest with you. It's another hopium story. But the hopium has a little bit more hope than it did yesterday, because we've got a new commissioner at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and they need a big change at the NRC in order to get these small modular reactors built. Ho Nie, named 20th NRC chairman. I hope I pronounced that right. I think it's Nie is how you pronounce that. Not going to get that right on the first try anyway. Ho K. Nie has been designated by the U.S. President Donald J. Trump as the 20th chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, effective immediately. He replaces David Wright, who the president named chairman on January 21st, and who will continue to serve as commissioner. So we got a new commissioner at the NRC. He's almost certainly going to be more friendly towards the president's initiatives. By the way, beware the politicization of the NRC. You do not want politics infecting your nuclear regulators. That being said, the NRC has become less of a regulator and more of a completely immovable roadblock to any future development of nuclear power that does need to change. But there's some important details about this guy taking over at the NRC here. Nie was sworn in as NRC commissioner December 4th, 2025, for term ending in 2029. Prior to becoming commissioner, Nie served as officer of Southern Nuclear on loan to the Institute of Nuclear Power Operators. He joined Southern Nuclear in March of 2021 to assume the role of Vice President of Regulatory Affairs after more than 20 years as an NRC staff member. So this guy has a lot of regulatory experience, 20 years at the NRC. He is a seasoned regulator. He also worked for Southern Nuclear. That's kind of interesting because Southern Nuclear, that's the company that built the Vogtle reactors down in Georgia, the ones that were hideously behind schedule and way over budget. So a guy with experience at Southern Nuclear taking over the NRC, at the very least, this guy knows what not to do when building a new reactor. Now, he didn't work there when most of those mistakes were made. They're saying he started in 2021. Most of the problems at Vogtle happened during the 2010s. One thing to keep in mind here is that they said he was on loan from Southern Nuclear to the Institute of Nuclear Power Operators. The Institute of Nuclear Power Operators, commonly referred to as INPO, that is a industry self-regulatory body. The nuclear industry got together after Three Mile Island and created INPO as a way to police itself so that the NRC doesn't have to get involved. INPO is actually a highly effective regulatory body, even though they don't have any legal authority. If INPO were to say to the NRC, hey, these guys are screwing up this nuclear reactor, they shouldn't be allowed to operate, the NRC would walk right in the control room and turn off that reactor and take the keys away. So the fact that he worked at INPO and the NRC, he's got a regulatory background that's very impressive. The one thing I would point out is that INPO at times can become a dumping ground for ineffective executives. All right, the running joke in the nuclear industry is when an executive screws up something, he gets sent to INPO. That's how they put him out to pasture. All right. It's like, you've got a year to find another job, but because we play golf together on the weekends, we're not going to fire you and we're going to let INPO pay your salary. All right. So it's kind of a dumping ground for screw ups. I'm not saying this guy is a screw up, but that's pretty much how INPO, what it's become over the years. So anyways, we'll see if this makes any changes in the rate at which we can get new nuclear plants built. Also, we've got Musk's XAI burns almost $8 billion in cash and reveals their Optimus plan. Don't worry about the $8 billion that we just burned in cash. We're going to build these humanoid robots. Just trust me, bro. All I need is your electricity. One thing I would point out here, XAI has been raising both equity and debt in that they've worked with Valor and Apollo Global Management on a special purpose vehicle to buy NVIDIA chips and expect to do more deals soon to keep building out its Colossus data center. Guys, all I can tell you is when you see special purpose vehicle, run, do not walk for the exits. The only reason to create a special purpose vehicle is to hide how much money you're borrowing to keep it off your balance sheet to make your company look better on paper. And the fact that they're getting together with these private equity and private credit firms in order to create special purpose vehicles to hide just how awful their books really look so they can keep inflating this bubble and buying NVIDIA chips, it is only a matter of time before this all fails in a spectacular fashion. Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. All right, we got a couple more. We're going to breeze through these. India, FX reserves log biggest drop in 14 months amid rupee rout. India is burning through their pile of dollars in order to support the rupee, which is losing value, and it's not working. The rupee is still in decline. They're selling dollars in the open market to buy their own currency to artificially prop up its value. And take a look. This is USD-INR. This is the number of rupees it takes to make $1. And this chart keeps going higher. You're looking at daily candles here. All right. So they started dumping their dollars to buy rupees a couple of weeks ago. We talked about that story here. That was an intervention in the FX market. And of course, it's always to rein in the speculators, right, President Nixon? To defend the dollar against the speculators. That's why they do it. No, they're trying to rig their markets because they keep abusing their currency to pay for their projects that they can't afford, but they keep paying for them anyway. And of course, currency debasement is the law of the land worldwide. So although that had a momentary effect on the rupee, you can see this overall trend higher is still very much intact. The rupee has had a rough year, a rough month, a rough forever. Look at this, monthly candles going all the way back, way back. The rupee only ever moves in one direction, and that is lower. Again, this chart moving higher, that's the value of the rupee going lower. And last but not least, GM to take a $6 billion write-down on their electric vehicle pullback. I told you in 2022 that electric vehicles was a bubble. I know some of you guys have been around since then. Some of you guys heard me say that. I said it over and over again. They're pumping too much money into electric vehicles. People don't want these cars. They're not going to sell. The infrastructure isn't there to support them yet. The batteries burn. The fire departments hate them. And everybody was like, oh, Jack, you're just a doomer. You're just a perma-bear. Kathy Wood said these companies are going to change the world. And Kathy Wood wears these funny glasses, and she's being propped up by the media for some reason. And I believe her. Well, no, all that money went up in smoke. This is just after Ford lost $19.5 billion last week. Now GM's taking a $6 billion write-down. Nobody saw this coming. GM stock down 2%. Holding up pretty well, $83.31, considering the news. And guys, I have to say, look at the one-year chart of GM stock, up 67% over the last year. You know, as much as we hear about doom and gloom in the auto sector, and hey, guilty of that myself, keep in mind the car companies are reducing production. And in reducing production, they're making more expensive cars with higher profit margins. Most people can't afford them, but it's working for their stocks. Their margins are getting big and fat because of it. Never mind the fact that the average person can't afford a car. They don't care because making luxury cars that still sell is very profitable. Although GM down a couple bucks on this big loss from the EVs. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Four Peas, who gifted five Nobody Special Finance memberships. Welcome to the Melonheads, you five baby melons, you. Thank you, Four P, Mr. P.P. Poo Poo, for supporting the channel. Appreciate that very much. And remember, guys, members get a free super chat every month. Use that. I will read and respond to your thoughts, questions, comments, and concerns live on the air. Nacho Man Randy Savage says, I will donate for my badness. Uh-oh. Did you get calibrated in the chat? Is that what happened? I don't know what happened, Nacho, but we're going like old school Dark Ages Catholicism in the super chats now. You can buy penance, apparently. All right. I'm a capitalist. I can get down with that. Thank you, Nacho Man, for supporting the channel. You're all right, man. And the moderate voice, thank you for supporting the channel, says Iran protests escalating, internet cut off. You know, we had a lot of stories this morning. I had a lot of stuff, and I did have to cut a few. And the Iran story, I left that out on purpose because there's a lot happening. There was a lot flying around on Twitter last night that's really hard to sort through the propaganda, the AI slop, and what's really happening on the ground. But regardless of what's real and what isn't, which I still don't know, the protests in Iran are very serious right now. How widespread, I don't know. Iran has cut off the internet nationwide before to try to squash protests. So maybe, just maybe, this is the one that finally takes down that god-awful regime. But that being said, be on alert, guys. There's so much fake stuff these days, and it's really hard to tell what's real. Scrutinize things. That's all I'd tell you. Scrutinize things. But you are right. I did see that they cut off the internet, and there's unconfirmed reports of very important buildings burning in very important cities in that country. So I'll hopefully have more to say about that once I'm able to sort through the fake from the real. Thank you, Moderate Voice, for supporting the channel. Uncle Fedster, thank you, sir. He says nothing to say, but happy Friday. Happy Friday, Uncle Fedster. Appreciate that very much. Man, that first week of January went quickly, didn't it? Thank you very much, sir. Happy Friday to you and yours. Wee Willie. What's Wee Willification? Okay, I see what you're doing there. It took me a minute to figure that out. He says, BLS, Bureau of Lying Statistics. What is going on? Yeah, I mean, the fact that unemployment drops so much amid a net loss over the last several months of jobs, because last month was a net loss of jobs reported also for October, November. Then we have a net loss reported again, and somehow unemployment goes down. That does not pass the sniff test, guys. And again, this economic data is too freaking important. Beware the infectious stink of politics in the economic data. We saw it with the last guy. The current guy is doing it too. It sucks. Don't rig the speedometer so that you can argue with your wife and be like, see, I'm not speeding, especially if you're steaming towards a freaking brick wall. It's a terrible idea. All right. This instrumentation is too important. See also the inflation metrics. Highly suspicious. I agree, Wee Willie. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Ryu, what's going on, Ryu? He says, tracking company Dart is getting bought out by private equity. Tracking company. That's it. I'm not familiar with the term. Oh, Dart. Is this the one they're getting together with the same company that owns Ring? I did see something about, I could be wrong. I might be getting my stories mixed. I'm going to have to put that one in the parking lot, Ryu. I'm not familiar with the name Dart. I mean, I could do a real quick check. What is Dart private equity? Let's see if that one comes up. What are the term Dart private equity? Now, I have no idea. Dart Transit ending 90 years of growth across the platform. All right. Going to have to research that one. Not going to do it live on the air. Thank you for the tip, sir. I will look into that one. And thank you also for supporting the channel. Steve Woitis, thank you, sir. He says, if the Treasury is buying MBS, will lenders lower lending standards because government will buy said mortgage, essentially putting a floor in the market? I don't know if they're going to necessarily lower the standards, but it is going to lower the rates, right? And the other thing to keep in mind here, the Treasury's buying MBS through Fannie and Freddie. Well, they're borrowing the money. Right. So if they're borrowing more money from the bond market, that's going to drive the cost of treasuries higher. That's going to drive the interest rate of treasuries higher. So borrowing hundreds of billions of dollars from the Treasury market, interest rates on bonds go up, and then using that money to buy mortgage-backed securities, interest rates on MBS comes down. So what are you really doing? You're tightening the spread between mortgages and Treasury bonds. And when you tighten the spreads, generally speaking, that means the risk premia is coming down. The amount that the mortgage lenders are rewarded for taking the risk of lending to a mortgage borrower versus just lending to the government is coming down. So does that mean lowering lending standards? It kind of does, at least in the terms of the mortgage lender is rewarded less for taking that risk. So you do kind of get there. It takes you a little bit, maybe a little bit of mental gymnastics involved there. And of course, if they know they can just sell this MBS to Fannie and Freddie, that there's a buyer waiting in the wings, then maybe they're just like, yeah, I don't care who I lend to because I'm not going to stick around long enough to find out if they can pay or not. I know Fannie or Freddie will buy it. So you could absolutely get lowering of lending standards. We have done these stupid things before and it didn't work then and it won't work this time. Thank you, Steve, for supporting the channel, sir. Ryu is back again, says, I watched YouTube video earlier saying that tech companies were rehiring workers at lower pay because AI isn't doing as promised. I can tell you if they're rehiring workers, it's not in the States. Tech has been laying off in the States a lot. So the people that they're rehiring are either H-1B visas or overseas. There's absolutely, within our tech companies, there is a massive replacement of American workers that has been going on for several years. Amanda Goodall, at the Job Chick on Twitter X, has done an excellent job of documenting this. Highly recommend you follow Amanda. She's been a guest on the channel before. Does not surprise me at all. Look, there have been some fantastic promises made about AI, and what has it given us? Fake slop. That is what we have gotten. It's going to solve physics. It's going to invent new materials. It's going to cure cancer, free education, all this crap. Nope. Slop. That's what we've gotten. It is impossible to tell what's real anymore because these video generators are really good. And sometimes you really got to study these images to tell if they're AI generated or not. Some are terrible, but I can tell you, older people in particular are having a hard time telling what's real. And these slop peddlers are deliberately targeting those older people. More to say on that in the days ahead. And the other thing, guys, is we are in a very polarized political environment. Political violence is becoming increasingly norm. And there's a lot of people are out there creating fake video rage bait. And it absolutely can move people to violence. And we're already on a nice edge sitting on top of a freaking powder keg with a lit match. So AI, they better fix this problem. It's not going away. They just better stop being such unbelievable freaking scumbags. Sam Altman, Elon Musk, Jensen Huang, all of you guys, like, have you stopped and looked at what you're actually doing to people? Do you care? I think I know the answer. Of course you don't care. You're getting rich off it. Thank you, Ryu, for supporting the channel. Marrowman 556. I like that number too. I like that number 223 also. I finally found out what my special purpose is for. What is your special purpose vehicle for? That's curious. I wonder what it is. Fill in the blanks. Let me know down in the comments, what is Merrill Man's new special purpose? Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. KDM28 gifted 10 Nobody Special memberships. Thank you so much, KDM. Welcome to the Melonheads. Guys, be sure and say thank you for that gifted membership. I appreciate the support of the channel, KDM. Thank you, sir. Red Stapler, yada, yada. All right, we got a little Seinfeld and a little Office Space in there. I can get down with both. Became a YouTube member. Welcome to the Melonheads, Red Stapler. Hey, on that subject, guys, just a reminder, today is our weekly get-together on Zoom for my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Thank you, Red Stapler. I hope things go very well. Try not to burn the building down. You get the reference. Jolly Lollipop 1 says, in the event of an EMP wiping out all the internet for a year, what will happen to my mutual funds and stocks? Will it all disappear forever and ever? If an EMP does wipe out the internet for a year, your mutual funds and stocks are the least of your concerns. That's like saying, if my house burns down, what's going to happen to my cell phone? You got bigger problems than your cell phone, right? Your life. If there really is an EMP that takes out the internet for a year, it's also going to take out the power grid for a year. Your bigger problems are going to be, what are you going to eat? What are you going to drink? And where are you going to shove unwanted items? because without power, without the internet, there's no running water. So you got bigger problems. Don't worry about your mutual funds in that event. If you're really worried about an EMP, which I personally am not particularly worried about an EMP, I do dabble in the whole prepping thing. Focus on your basic biological needs more so than your finances in that event. Thank you very much, Jolly Lollipop, for supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out, should you feel so inclined. Thanks again, guys, for all the very generous super chats and support of the channel, as well as you magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below. Looking forward to talking to you guys at 2 p.m. Eastern Time today for our weekly get-together on Zoom. I'll be posting that link momentarily. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small, dream big.